Welcome to the BS Show. Are you ready to shoot the... The BS Show would like to thank their sponsors. Jack Cameron, accredited mortgage professional. Jack can show you the way home. Graco Impact Sports, providing top quality combat sport equipment, tested and used by all levels of athletes. Dominate your world. Reposales.ca, specializing in vehicle and equipment recovery, liquidation, and sales. Hemmings House Pictures, the global movement media makers, helping tell your brand story to the world and accelerate the momentum of your movement. Farm Box Films, capturing stories the way you want to remember them.
Greetings, fellow humans. Welcome back to the BS Show, the one, the only podcast in Atlantic Canada dedicated to mixed martial arts and combat sports. I am your host, the very fatigued, slightly distracted, much exhausted Boyd Sharp, joined as always by my partner in crime, Mr. Rick Trash Canyon Doyle. How are you tonight, Rick?
Hey, buddy, it's good to have you back in the saddle, I'll tell you that. I mean, you would think I'd get used to pulling you around and keeping up the slack, but I'll tell you, I really miss you, brother. It's good to have you back.
No, you didn't miss me at all, man. I got a chance to check out the show. You and Skippy did a fantastic job. The place went, conversation went in all kinds of places that I probably wouldn't have taken it, and I loved every minute of it. It was awesome. You guys did great. And given his perspective from a very different part of the world, but obviously a place dealing with some of the same challenges around local mixed martial arts, it was pretty awesome to hear.
Well, it was nice to work, with a true professional for a change. But good to have you here tonight, Skip. How you doing, brother?
I am doing good, man. Boyd, it's always good to hear you. I it's funny. I've heard your intro every week that you've ever done the show, and I messed it completely up.
I was pretty pissed off, to be honest.
That just shows how many people actually listen to what Boyd has to say, to be honest.
Hey,
everybody remembers the sunscreen, though.
Yes,
yeah,
and I want to tell you, Boyd, thank you for letting me take over your seat. It was an enjoyable evening with Rick. I had a blast. Big shout out to Wade Graves as well.
Boy, what
yeah,
did Wade
do? I love
do?
That guy. it totally was cool to have HR in there, though, because I'd not had a chance to listen to a lot of his shows. Hear him talking about what they're facing down in Arkansas, and in many ways it's some of the same type of issues that we're dealing with up here in rural Nova Scotia, or rural Canada, if you call Halifax rural. I mean, Rick, he had... It was a show they hadn't had MMA there in quite a long time, and they did a small show, 400 people, $25 a ticket, and they were pretty happy with that. And I was sitting there with my eyes kind of swelled wide open going, well, I mean, who's taking the tank on that? Because I don't know how those numbers work. Like, how do you break even putting on an MMA show with $25 a ticket and 400 people show up? I can't figure that one out.
Yeah, I was kind of shocked, too, because we consider our market here like a pretty small market, and it was great to hear from HR, by the way. Blew my mind when he called in, but that was awesome. But it was great to get another perspective on a show from another area, even another country. And I was shocked, too, when he said that. When he, I said, how many people were there? And he said 400. And I thought, oh, my God, if we got 400 here for a show, like a promoter is going to lose his shirt if that shit goes down. I don't know
why.
If
you rent your venue and you give the commission $7,000 just to put a pro show on, I mean – there's your money. Your money's gone. Like, what the hell do you pay the fighters and all that stuff and the hotels and get people traveling in? Like, damn.
You're looking, though, for an amateur show for the commission. Like, I'm just going to say in Oregon.
Oh, it was an amateur show?
It was an amateur
show.
Yeah,
it was there.
Okay.
But
that helped.
You're talking $2,200 for the commission. That's all your inspectors and everything, your doctors, your refs.
Yeah.
Maybe a smaller show, you're looking about $2,200, maybe $2,500. Then you talk, like, I know the venue that Budo Fights is at, they agreed to give them 70% of the alcohol sales and take 30% in exchange for their venue. So
okay.
they're not, you know, so, you know, if Budo fights, which is next in like 2 weeks, you know, they do like they normally do, they're going to put 800 to 1,000 people in there. So
well,
at
good.
You know, $25 a ticket, you know, plus the sponsorship money, I mean, I'm just going off 2 Budo fights ago, but I think he pulled in like 12,000-13,000 for sponsorships. So
nice. So he's paying all his fighters. Well, no, it's amateurs. He's not even paying fighters, but he's paying like travel for fighters and such
yes.
through the sponsorship money, like the sponsors for the event, not the
yes.
the fighter sponsors.
No, and he brought in fighters from Colorado, Washington, Idaho, and Nevada for that event.
Well, kudos to those guys, man, that they found a formula that works for them. And, okay, so apologies to everybody right off. I didn't know I was doing a show until about 45 minutes ago. And Rick, persuasive bugger that he is, talked me into it because I'm completely, completely distracted and swamped at work right now. But super awesome that I did get here to do the show, because now I'm here, I'm actually stoked to do it. But this is a perfect segue into our first topic, and we're going to jump around a lot tonight. But amateur MMA. Rick, you might know more about this than I do at present, but we have a first amateur-only card, amateur-only MMA card coming up in November, don't we?
Well, I don't really know that much about it, to be honest. But I know that it is coming up, and I know that we were going to plan on talking about this in the next couple of weeks. But I think it's Muay Thai. I think there's some amateur MMA, and there might be some amateur kickboxing on that card as well. It looks like these guys are shaking things up a little bit and trying to mix some different things in for amateur, you know, some
well,
different...
It throws me back to something that that HR said, and it actually brings me back to a conversation that we had with Brian Halquist many, many, many months ago now, where he talked about a key for his promotions has been first-time fighters or fighters very, very new in their career, because those are the guys that pull in their uncles, their aunts, their cousins, their high school football buddies, and everybody else that wants to see them fight for the first time or think it's cool and weird that they're getting into this sport and they want to see the spectacle. And you touched on it last week, too, saying fighters who have 7 or 8 fights may not be bringing in as many fights as a dude who's never fought before in his life. So I'm interested to see what effect that is going to have on this card on November 28th here in Halifax, when we have a bulk of the fights are going to be amateur MMA fights, maybe even a lot of first-timers. The fight promotion, actually, it started by Peter Martel, and we'll have to get Peter on to find out who else is involved. But Peter, who's promoted Extreme Cage Combat Professional Mixed Martial Arts for a number of years in Halifax, is doing this new promotion, and it's called Fight First. And I guess because it's amateur MMA, it's in many cases going to be a lot of people's first fights. So I'm really interested to see if this is going to pull in maybe even as many or more people than we would see at a pro MMA fight here in Halifax.
Yeah, okay. I support that 100% because amateur fights are necessary. I mean, you've got to get in there. You've got to get your feet wet. You've got to know if you've got enough to go to the next level. But there comes a point that if you're doing these fights that you deserve to become professional and you deserve to get paid. My concern in this is that if promoters start diving into amateur fights and amateur promotions just simply because that's the way that they can make money, then it may eliminate the potential for professionals to come out of this area. That's my only concern. I don't think, you know, I think
it's
everybody...
It's a valid concern. Very valid.
Well, I mean, you know, these pro fights are hard for people to make money on. It's hard. There's so many headaches and very little back end to come out of these things. And, you know, you can have a promoter that has a genuine love of the sport and love of the fighters, but just financially can't make pro, you know, make money with pro fights and tends to go to amateurs just so they can make them happen. That's
well,
the damn thing.
But let's look at it a slightly different way for a second. Let me play the devil's advocate here, and let's say maybe the sport has not hit the mainstream enough. Maybe the fighters that are training are not at a level where they should be fighting pro yet. Maybe
no
we could
bullshit,
do amateur
no,
amateur
bullshit.
Only MMA around here, and that would make the sport grow.
hey, listen, if we wouldn't have produced the fighters out of this area that we have, I would agree with you. But come on now. You look at who has come out of just Atlantic Canada that's fighting in either Bellator or the UFC. I can't agree with you. There's something that's coming out of this area. There's a level of fighter coming out of this area that we need to continue pro fighting in this area. There's no doubt about it. There's more pro fighters that have come out of here in the UFC and Bellator than anywhere else in the world per capita that I know of.
Yeah, but, you know, Boyd makes a good point. Look, I can talk to both sides of the fences because I've seen it in different parts of the country here. But in your area, and this is just where we're going to talk about, if you could get two or three more promotions that are amateur-based running three or four times a year, you would see a better talent pool and more successful pros because right now, you've got kids who are turning pro, and we have this problem in Oregon. You've got kids turning pro before they should because they want a paycheck and there's nowhere as an amateur to fight any longer, okay?
Right.
We're seeing a watered-down system of fighters in this new generation, and that's not okay.
Rick,
well,
Rick, here's one other point, Rick, before you jump in. You and I have both seen instances where there are fighters who have one fight, two fights under their belt, maybe, and for them, it's about the money. It's about the contract. It's about the, what they're going to get to show, what they're going to get to win. If that's the focus of their fight game when they're one or two fights in, then their focus is in the wrong place.
Why?
Well, because their focus should be on becoming a better fighter, and the only way you can do that is by training and fighting. And that's why amateur sports exists. Who goes into any professional sport arena having never actually performed in that sport more than one or two times? And in the case of a lot of the fighters who've been fighting here in Nova Scotia, because we never had amateur MMA before, the first time they ever competed in the sport was as a professional. Where does that exist in any other sport?
Okay, I understand that totally, but something is working in this area, Boyd. So, I mean, don't be general on it. Like, that may be the case somewhere, but in this particular area, there's a formula that seems to be working. I mean,
I do agree with you that a large number of really, really good fighters have come out of a relatively small number of gyms and a small population in Atlantic Canada. I can see that 100%. But if there was a more well-developed and thriving amateur circuit in Atlantic Canada, who's to say that number wouldn't be three times as big?
Yeah.
And here's
Rick. Let me just finish this because I understand what you're saying, Boyd, but there's also a point when fighters start getting exploited as well. You take a look at Nogler, man. How many goddamn fights did he have at amateur? 120 pro boxing fights. 120 pro boxing fights. Other people made money off that.
You mean amateur fights? You just said pro. You meant amateur, right?
Yeah, amateur fights. 120 amateur fights.
Yeah.
A lot of people made money off that.
Yeah, boxing is the exact opposite end of the scale, and you're right. And there has to be a balance somewhere in the middle. I'm not saying we need to do away with pro MMA completely, but I am saying that you need a balance of the two. You need a way for kids to get in and learn the sport, not at the pro level, but you also need then, like you say, somewhere for them to go when they reach that next level.
And Rick, you know, not every person that steps inside a training facility to become a fighter wants to be a pro, okay? So right now you're scaring off a lot of the market that, as amateurs, want to see if this is even what they want. They want to try it. And you put somebody in there who's not ready as a pro, and they're discouraged and never come back to the sport, and we lose one more supporter. And when it comes to the money being made off of them, it's no different than, you know, high school football, high school baseball, high school hockey. You know, this is what you got to look at. We are trying to develop these kids in a sport and give them an opportunity to choose that path on their own. I'm a big fan of pancration with the ABC class of amateur fighting, which is dying out in America. But it's because not everybody is built for this sport. Not everybody is going to want to do it long term.
And we're going to touch on this in the weeks coming up, but we're going to learn a lot, me and you, Rick, about stand-up fighting, kickboxing, Muay Thai, point karate. I've been chatting in the background with Skippy a little bit. He's going to hook us up with some absolute world-class experts on, I don't even know what the hell you call it. Is there a name for when you group together, say, Muay Thai, K-1 style kickboxing, that type of thing?
Each discipline is separate, but guys jump from discipline to discipline, but they're completely different styles of fighting, but both based in punches and kicks, you know.
Yeah,
only.
Exactly,
so,
yes.
But,
punchy,
you know,
kicking-based type sports.
Yeah, and I definitely, you know, if it looks like we're going to have Lou, I'm just trying to finalize everything, and, you know, this is a guy who's literally a living legend, you know. I mean, the sport of kickboxing or Muay Thai is, to me, is such a beautiful art form, and it's a human chess match. One wrong move and the fight is over.
We're going to have some of these guys on that Skippy's going to hook us up with, and then we're also going to have on some local guys, because we do want to give an Atlantic Canadian flavor, so we're going to let people know where they can find out more if we pique their interest. And I totally can't remember where I was going with all that.
Well, I just want to go back for a second and just go back to Skippy. Skip, I'm not against amateur fights at all. I just want to make sure that the goal of these people is to hopefully turn pro someday, and that the pro fights still exist. I just don't want to see opportunities for pros to diminish. That's all I was saying. I love the idea of amateur.
I agree with that 100% too, Rick.
But not all the fighters, just like in high school, are going to want to be pro football players. A lot of them just want to do it so that they can say 10 years down the road, I was an MMA champion at 135 for, you know, ECC, you know. I mean, that's the thing, this is not a sport any longer where it's either you're a pro and that's your life. So we don't have fighters anymore. We have athletes who fight. We used to have fighters that were athletic, and that's what the sport's become today. So the amateurs are going to swell up there eventually, and they're going to have 7 shows to 1. And that is horrible, but that's the reality.
Yeah. I just want to make sure that in the future we continue to put pro fighters out of this area, not just amateur fighters, but pro fighters as well, because they need that pro record to make that big leap. And these guys have been making that leap, and that needs to continue.
Agreed. And you know the way to make that happen? The way to make that happen is two ways that I can see of. Number one is, A, having an amateur option where some of these fighters, like Skippy mentioned, who aren't going to be willing to make that leap directly into pro, directly from classes in a gym, having an amateur circuit where they can cut their teeth and they can get that comfort level and they can move on to pro. And number two is doing the work to beat the street, to get asses in seats both at the amateur shows and at the pro shows, so that we have a viable market here for MMA. Because Extreme Cage Combat is the most successful promotion that we have in Nova Scotia. There have been a few others that came and went. Ricky Goodall, I know, through EFCP, put on a couple of shows. I believe Scott McLean maybe at one point was involved with another promotion, Phoenix perhaps. There have been a couple of other guys that have put on shows. But really, it's been ECC that's done, up to now, 21, 22 shows. And, I mean, there's no money made. There's no nest egg being built where they can go on to the next level or try something new. So we need a different approach for how we're going to get people to come out to these shows. What that is, I don't know. I don't have the answer. But I do know I love local mixed martial arts. I love, and that's not even an exaggeration, I love the young athletes who are in all the gyms that you and I have had an opportunity to meet in the past few years. I love the fact that they're in there working their asses off, and I want to see them fight, and I want to see them fight locally so I can be selfish and go out and watch it myself, sit in their cage side. But I really need to see something change in the local environment before I'm going to be comfortable that we have a strong and viable mixed martial arts audience for local fighters and local promotions, because I know there's a quote-unquote UFC audience here, because 11 friggin' thousand of them showed up at the Scotiabank Center a couple of weeks ago. So how we convince those guys to come out and see the awesome fights that are taking place on the regional shows is for us and people smarter than us to figure out in the next number of months.
Well, this is a perfect example of what I was talking about last week, about how, where this is such a new sport, how it's actually developed backwards than most sports do. So here right now, like, you know, you've got the UFC, and then suddenly there's a local promotion that starts doing pro fighters, and now we're going back to, we're developing an amateur league or amateur fight.
Yeah, that's right. It's completely
ass
backwards.
Instead of going the other way,
You're 100% right.
Like most sports do. So, you know, maybe when we get to this level and we develop the amateur program, then everything will grow. It may be the only way that this can grow. I don't know.
And that can't happen quickly. If you were to stroll into Saudi Arabia and hand everybody a pair of hockey skates, you probably wouldn't have a whole lot of NHL players coming out of there in the first number of years. Am I right?
Well, I think it's something I heard a stat on hockey, that when the women's hockey team first started in a certain country, it took 10 years before
right.
they were at a level where Team Canada was. So that's for hockey, and that's a very rigid sport right from an early age in Canada. I mean, kids are on the ice at 4 years of age, and they're doing, like, incredible amount of training at 4 years of age. So you can't expect an MMA program, which, in my opinion, takes much more skill from many assets, you know, that's involved
from
the sport.
Yeah, from many different disciplines, absolutely.
Yeah, it simply takes years and years.
Yeah.
Okay,
we're going to touch on this in future shows. We're never going to stop beating this dead horse until I can walk down to the Metro Center to watch, the Scotiabank Center to watch regional MMA. So we'll jump off it for tonight. But as everyone knows, you and I do not have the answers. We need people smarter and more knowledgeable than us to figure out how we're going to get more asses in the seats, more supporters of local fighters, more supporters of local gyms, and more supporters of local promotions so that we can have a thriving MMA community in Atlantic Canada.
Okay. And if you love the sport and you love what you do, and you're listening to this program, you have a responsibility, in my opinion, to get out there and spread the word. So spread the word about this show, and spread the word about your gym, and spread the word about the local fighting promotions here. Help put people in the seats.
November 28th, Fight First. You're going to get to see Nova Scotia's first professional Muay Thai. You're going to be able to see some amateur mixed martial arts with some kids who have been putting in hard work in the gym and stepping in there for only the first or second times in their lives. So guaranteed to be some exciting stuff. So get online, find out some more details.
I think Nikki's fighting as well on that, isn't she?
Nikki Claroux?
Hmm.
Is she still on that card? I know she was on it when it got postponed a number of months ago. I haven't heard any mention of her since then. I'll reach out to her and find out. Nikki Claroux was a cast member of Cubicle to the Cage, and she did not fight at the end of the show. She felt she wasn't ready. She felt she needed more time before she'd be ready to fight, and apparently she has gotten to the point now where she does feel she's ready to get in there as an amateur, like Skippy said. Sometimes people aren't willing to jump into the pro ranks. So I'll dig around on that, Rick, and see if I can't find out if she is on that card, because if she is, I'm excited because she's a bull.
Oh, I saw Robin the other night, too.
Oh, yes, Robin Smith. He's been popping up on my Facebook once in a while. I don't think he's training much these days.
No, you know what he's doing? He's working the front desk at the Marriott Hotel. It's hilarious.
Is he really? And going to school as well?
Yeah, he's all dude up in this, like, little suit and tie and everything working. His body still looks like a half-melted candle, but he's got a big grin on his face. And he's
probably even more
time.
So now. Probably even more so. He was looking pretty ripped there when he fought. Okay, I got to give a couple of shout-outs, and you can tune in with your thoughts on them where appropriate. I don't know if it's necessarily appropriate or not to put it out widely, but it's out on Facebook, so I'm going to put it out there anyway. Mr. Matt McGrath just announced that they're having their third kid. I think that means like three kids under the age of five. So I hope to God we get to see Matt in the cage very, very soon, because if not, he's going to be too damn busy to train anymore, which will be a massive loss to the local MMA community. Also out of PEI, and Rick, I think you may know this more about this than I do, there's an event going on there called Fight for the Cure, and this might seem hokey to MMA purists, but I absolutely love it. It's a whole bunch of like combat sports and fight entertainment companies pulled together to do a fundraiser for the Canadian Cancer Society.
Hokey my ass, man. What are you talking about? That's ridiculous. Yeah, I got a text from my son this morning because Zach does some refereeing for pro wrestling now these days. He's done really well at it. And he wrote me a text here. Let me see if I can find it. Could you promote our event at next week? It's a Canadian Cancer Fundraiser. It's called Fight for the Cure, November 8th, 7 p.m. at the PEI Brewing Company. We have karate and kickboxing demos, as well as Matt McGrath and Professor Abel doing a jiu-jitsu demonstration. Jason Salgo will also be there signing autographs. The tag match will be Cowboy Mike Hughes and Coke versus Brody Steele and Sexton Phoenix, $25 advance and $35 at the door. So it sounds like they got something pretty cool happening.
If you got hair on your chest, I think that's where you need to be if you're in PEI.
Yeah, well, I know the boys all train together over there, you know, in the gym and whatnot, so they all know each other pretty well, and it's a good cause. So I think they're doing some cross promotion between wrestling and fighting, and in the end, that can only help everybody, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's for a good cause. I mean, the Canadian Cancer Society obviously does fantastic work, so it's super to see those guys pull that together. I actually mentioned to Peter Martel doing a very similar type event in 2015, and the working title that we had was Fight Cancer, and to pull together sort of a martial arts expo-type day with a pro or amateur MMA card at the end of it. So.
That'd be cool.
About much
I'll tell you.
Yeah.
Another cause would be really good would be brain injury or something, eh? I mean,
actually, yeah. I mean, that would be a really good tie-in. We could do a whole thing with Sabby D and Dr. Sabby D from Fight MD and the whole thing.
I talked to him 2 weeks ago. Actually, I went to Chris Kaladi's had a victory party at the Old Triangle down in Halifax. So. I went down and joined it. I didn't. I was kind of walking into a lion's den there. I didn't know how I was going to be received. Considering I fought two of their guys before, but no, all
yeah,
great guys.
Yeah, enemy territory for trash.
Yeah. No, they're all great guys, man. And it was a good party. And I talked to Tristan Johnson. Cokes was there. Of course, the man of the hour, and had a nice chat with TJ Grant as well as Coach McLean, and those guys are jacked over there, man. Like they're on cloud nine, and all the power to them.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. I mean, obviously Chris Kaladi's doesn't need any more promotion from us right now. I think he's doing quite well on his own. But I did notice that his last opponent before fighting Patrick Houlihan at the UFC was Adrian Woolley, who I quite frankly thought was the best 125er in the country. And Adrian just won the FFC title in Ontario. So, I mean, if Chris needed any more feathers in his cap, a guy that he goes out and beats, then goes to Ontario and wins the title up there. So, I mean, like I said, he obviously doesn't need the promotion right now, but just one more sign of exactly how good of a fighter he really is.
Yeah, we haven't seen the last of Woolley, that's for sure.
No. I mean, if Adrian doesn't end up in the UFC, then I'm a monkey's uncle because that guy has the full package. Just an absolutely fantastic guy, a very smart guy, very marketable guy, and a tremendous, tremendous, tremendous fighter who happened to come out on the wrong end of his fight with Kaladi's. But other than that, it might be very well him in the UFC and Chris on the outside. So super exciting to see that kind of got determined on a fight right here in Halifax, eh?
Well, they say a loss is you learn more from a loss than you do a victory. So you and I should be geniuses now about that.
Yes. I got another shout out for you. Did you ever get a chance to run into Lenny Wheeler? I know he spent some time around Titans when I think his girlfriend or fiance was going to school over here in Halifax, and saw him in Titans a few times. He's from PEI. He gave a big shout out to Jason Sago and Paul Abel and Matt McGrath and all those guys when he fought in Malaysia this week. He got a first round TKO. He called it before the fight. He said, "I'm going to TKO the guy in the first round," and then he went in there and did it. A guy from Italy, sorry, I miss his name, but that was on the Malaysian invasion event, and he just looked phenomenal. Holy hell, he was doing the thing where I was trying to think of the fighter that he reminded me of, and it just wasn't coming to me when I watched the fight. Skippy, you have the link. Can you throw that up there, maybe on our Twitter and Facebook page?
I'm going to post that right
now.
And,
if you jump to the 1 hour and 40-minute mark of that fight, you'll see Lenny's fight. And he was standing in what I would call like a wrestler's stance, like that sort of real low front knee wide stance. And from that position, he was throwing as hard as he could with his left and right hand. And he just, like, he had the guy, like, unconscious on his feet three times. And the guy must be a tough son of a bitch because the referee eventually stepped in and stopped it with the guy crumpling but still on his feet. The guy tried to argue the stoppage, but there's no way in hell he should have been allowed to take any more punishment.
Hey, by the way, just so you know, this is an interesting fact, but we are now working with Malaysian Invasion, and we just started with their last event this past weekend. So.
You know what, Skippy? It doesn't even surprise me anymore because if it ain't UFC, you guys got it.
Hey, you know, just odd side fact, we just signed up a new person to start covering the local scene, not only in Russia, but in Brazil.
Good stuff.
Man, you're going all the time. Are you still training yourself at all, Skip?
Yeah, I'm training on being a lazy ass guy who works 85 hours a week in a bar that he should have never gotten involved in.
What do you do? What do you do in the bar?
This is what happens when you work for friends, Skippy. Never do favors for friends.
I walked away. I decided to spend all my time and effort on Madhouse, and I walked away from the bar business, and a good friend who I worked with for a decade came to me and said, "Can you help me open my new bar?" And I was like, "Yeah." And I signed a 1-year agreement, and I literally was told it was going to be 40 hours a week. I'm doing like seriously some weeks 70 hours, you know, and it's just like, ugh. And I still got to do Madhouse. That don't stop.
The bar business is hard to get away from once it gets in your blood. It's like you're in a giant bubble. It's hard to get out of.
Yep. But I tell you what, I got the best food in a 100-mile radius. Nobody can compete. Everything is fresh, made in-house. Literally fresh ground hamburger meat every day, fresh chicken, fresh bread, everything. I go pick my produce every morning by hand.
That's cool, man. That
we're
going to
get down there. We got to get down there, Rick. We got to get this people, man.
Yeah, absolutely. That'd be cool. So,
okay,
Yeah,
the other point I wanted to make about the Lenny Wheeler fight is the guy's nickname was The Zen. I'm kind of wondering if he didn't want to beat the piss out of him for trying to steal Jason Sago's nickname.
Okay.
You never know. Might be. Yeah, right. Never know. Our good friend Mr. Mike Malott registered his first loss at the World Series of Fighting just a couple of weeks ago. I tuned into the fight, and I haven't had a chance to talk to Mike about it yet. I did have a couple of comments back and forth with him on Facebook. He was completely absent off of social media there for a little bit. I know he was just completely destroyed as a result of the loss. As you can imagine, a guy with as much promise and as much hype, and having had some really, really impressive first-round victories in his first three fights, I'm sure he had quite a way to fall. But, I mean, obviously I think he's the kind of guy that's going to grow stronger and come back better as a result of it. But Rick, I don't know, did you have a chance to see the fight, Rick?
I checked out the fight, and I'm not even going to talk about that. I'm going to talk about the winning or losing, because like I said, you and I both know that you can learn more from a loss than you can from a win. And I don't know that from all this experience in fighting, but I do know that from my experience in life. And I'm able to look back, and, you know, I know Mike, and I have the utmost respect for him, and he's an incredibly talented kid. And we've watched him ride that train to victory and how it feels, and now he's experiencing a loss. And you and I can sit back and kind of chuckle and say, you know what, it's going to be okay at the end of the day. But it's his experience, and he needs to go through it, and he needs to learn from it. And we get the beauty of standing back and see what happens because of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, Mike forgets more every time he eats a headshot than I will ever know about fighting. But I do know how to be an MMA fan. I do know how to be a fight watcher. And that's about the most that I'll ever be able to say about that. And when I watched his fight, I had the distinct impression that there were two guys in the cage, and one of them was fighting, and the other guy was sparring. And Mike looked like he'd never really got out of the sparring pace or the sparring intent. And he had a couple of shots, and he ended up getting TKO'd on the feet. Much kudos for his chin, because the guy landed some massive shots. Eventually, with Mike dazed against the cage, he threw just a monstrous elbow into the side of Mike's head, and he still didn't go down, and the referee finally stepped in. He'd seen enough. So confidence for him there, knowing that, that he can take those shots. But, yeah, I texted him afterwards and said, Mike Malott 2.0 is going to be absolutely scary now that he has this to build off of.
Absolutely. You've got to experience that, just as you'll always experience it in life. And like I say, we can sit back and smile, because at the end of the day, we're going to see, you know, losing's part of life. And how you deal with that determines where you go. And, you know, you get knocked down, man, you get back up. And if you really want it, you'll continue to go for it. If you didn't really want it, well, then you're done. You've got a nice excuse to hide behind. And that's not saying that to my. That's saying that to everybody, you know. That's just the way things.
Hey,
anyways,
Rick, you make a good point, because there's a young man by the name of Anderson Silva in 2006 lost to Yushin Okami, and what happened when he came back? He went undefeated until late 2013 and won every
Yushin
single
Okami
fight.
Or Rio Chonin?
No, he lost to Rio Chonin first, and then he had that it was that Hawaii card, the Rumble on the Rocks, and he did that illegal up kick when Yushin still had 3 points to the ground.
Right.
But remember, he came back after that, and what was it, like 20 fights or something ridiculous that he went on a win streak, and he accredited loss. He said that loss was bitter to him. You know, it changed everything about his training. So losses can do great things for some people. It's like anger's not a bad emotion. How you use it's bad. You know, a loss is not a bad thing. It's how you make it, you know, fit your life, your training, your work.
Yeah, listen, man. Nonstop winning can be a rut, just like nonstop losing can be a rut. And that is 100% true. And as Rick said, I can't comment on it as winning and fighting, but I can comment it on by winning and losing in life. And if you just get into the same pattern of making things work, maybe you're only just getting by every damn time. But if you lose, you're forced to take a step back, and now you can come at things from a different angle. You can develop different skills, and you become a much, much better person in whatever realm you're in, whether it's fighting or business or something else.
Absolutely. And you remember, Boyd, when I sat down with Danny there before the fight, and Danny and I didn't see everything eye to eye, obviously, because I look at the world, you know, it's not all bright and sunshiny to me. I mean, I think there's a lot of darkness and a lot of gray in this world. But one thing that Danny did point out to me, he said, if you have negative thoughts and you know you don't believe that you can do something, that you will add more. It snowballs and it grows and it continues to grow. And negativity is like that. But if you keep things positive, you can turn that. You can spin anything that gets you down in your life. You can spin it into a positive. And that's
dude,
what you gotta do, not just in fighting, but just in life, man.
Yeah, dude, I got to tell you something right now, and this is 100% true. I am completely not bullshitting you, but my 7-year-old daughter had her first judo tournament this past weekend, and she was pretty nervous. We were traveling to another province. We're going to be driving like 6 hours. She was going to have to compete against kids that she didn't know for the first time, and she was kind of keyed up, and her and I talked about it a lot, and I was just trying to tell her, you know what, it's going to be fun. Don't really think about the competition, but she's pretty focused on her judo right now, so she was thinking about the competition. And she came to me one day and she said, "Dad, do you know the best way that you can win?" And I said, "What's that?" And she said, "To first believe you can win." And I was sitting there looking at her going, this sounds like some kind of bullshit that I made up and told her, but I totally didn't. I didn't. Honest to God, I didn't. So
well, the kid's already spread new.
Yeah, I mean, I just took a second and I was like, okay, I got to dig into this. So I was like, did you hear that from your sensei? Did you hear that from Sensei Jason? And she said, no. She said, it's just something I figured out.
Well, she got a pretty good perspective on life, then. I'll give her that.
Yeah, and just a quick update on that. We did go up to Fredericton to the Fall Judo Classic. She was quite literally the very first match of the day on Sunday, because 7 years old is as young as they compete, the under eight age group. And she was picked to fight in the very first match, and she won her match. So,
is that right? Her.
Yeah, congratulations,
now,
Annika.
When you were standing there watching her, Boyd, I mean, what kind of emotions was she going through? Was she, like, visibly nervous, or...?
When they were getting ready to go out on the mats and the judges were giving the instructions for how they were going to be conducting it and how they were going to score it and what to do when the referee told you this, that, and the other thing, she was so nervous and keyed up, she refused to go out on the mat and she was clung to my leg. And
really?
I eventually had to say to her, I said, listen, Annika, if you want to leave, we'll leave, but you have to go over there and get your instructions for the match, or I'm going to have to leave. I'll go away if you want me to. So she begrudgingly walked the 5 feet out onto the mat, got her instructions, and then before she knew it, they called her name. And the moment they called her name, everything changed. She literally skipped out to the mat, got down on her knees. Her and her opponent were smiling at each other before, during, and after the match. It was just an awesome thing to see.
But look at the huge obstacle that she just went through right there to walk out in front of all those people when she was terrified. I was nervous for my last fight. Did I tell you that?
Yeah, you did. You did, which is
unusual
for you. I mean, you've been in front of crowds for 15 years.
First time I had ever felt that. And just before I broke the curtain, I remember feeling it the first few times I did pro wrestling. Actually, probably about the first year, I was terrified because, you know, you're walking out in front of a bunch of people in your underwear. And, that's what you're doing, right? And
things that only Victoria's Secret models and wrestlers can associate with.
Yeah. But for the last fight, I was standing there, and I looked at Pete, and I said, fuck, man, I'm nervous. And he said, what? And I said, I'm really nervous. I said, you know, just before I went out, it was an awful feeling. It really was. But I don't know why I experienced that. But kudos to her, because she would have felt that exact same thing. She fought through it. That's a huge step in her life, not just in fighting,
but in her
life.
And she's getting that at 7 years old, as opposed to somebody like myself who stepped into the cage the first time at age friggin' 41 or 42, actually. So the other point of that is, throwing back to the conversation we were having earlier about the amateur MMA, I mean, those people are going to be able to get that experience in the cage in front of a crowd doing their craft so much earlier and in a more controlled fashion than just being thrown into an MMA fight. Not to dive back into that whole conversation, but...
Yeah. True enough.
Okay, I have one more conversation that I want to have here, and it's a bit too TMZ gossip, trash talk, to really have my attention, but I think it's too big of news to really ignore. So here's the deal. A fighter out of Ontario, Michael Imperato. He came down here. He fought Mike Malott a number of years ago. Mike Malott actually is the only person to ever defeat Michael Imperato. He got a call this week from the UFC. We want you for the big show. Within 24 hours, the UFC rescinded their offer and cut him from the UFC.
Okay.
So he was on a reality television show called Fighter Exchange a number of years ago. And I'm only going to give you the facts. I don't know Michael Imperato at all. I've never met him. And I'm not going to judge, and I'm not going to give in to rumor or innuendo or anything else. I'll just give you the facts. He made a very insensitive racial slur at somebody on the show, and it was widely broadcast on television, so that's not hidden. He apologized for it, and as you and I both know, Rick, you say some things sometimes when there's a camera on you and you're trying to make a television show as well as live your life that maybe are not part of your personality, but maybe they are. And like I said, I don't know Michael Imperato. I'm not trying to put words in his mouth, but it was said and it was documented, and obviously there was suitable outrage for it. So this was a number of years ago. UFC calls, and you know Lyndon Whitlock. He's fought down here in Atlantic Canada a number of times. Truly awesome guy from a fantastic camp. Well, him and Michael Imperato don't like each other. They've been wanting to fight. They're accusing each other of ducking one another, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. Michael Imperato gets his call from the UFC. Lyndon went on Twitter, tagged Dana White and Sean Shelby with a comment quoting what he said on the show, the racial slur he said on the show, and saying, "I can't believe you put this guy in the UFC. He's a racist." And lo and behold, it caught fire on social media, and boom, Michael Imperato's dreams are now dashed. What do you think about all that? Skippy and
man, that's,
Rick.
That's Skip, go ahead. That's right out of a made-for-TV movie there.
You know, I think, for me personally, look, it's whatever, man. People make mistakes. Look, you live, you learn, you get over it. You know, I think certain people are going to look at this as, I have a business, a brand, a product. I can't be tied to that in any way, you know. That kind of behavior, those kind of remarks, you know, or anything that is deemed negative in the public eye. So I understand from a business side of why a company would, you know, stand back and say, "Hey, hold on, let's revisit this issue." But personally, I mean, this is the sport we live in. I mean, you have gruff people here. You have guys who have not grown up with a silver spoon in their mouth. You have guys who have been to prison. You have guys who, you know, were drug addicts. You have all walks of life, especially on the darker side, that have used this sport to better themselves and to get right with life, you know. So I think you can't punish somebody like that. I think that's dumb.
Well, thank you.
And actually, Rick, before you jump in, I will say, when the show, or either before the show aired or when the show aired, Imperato did come out and give like a full-on explanation and apology and say it's wrong. He completely knows it's wrong, and it's something that like he was gonna try to like to better himself and all that stuff. So, but again, is that the kid with the cookie, his hand in the cookie jar? Sorry that he got caught, and not sorry that he was stealing the cookies, or is he legitimately, like you say, Skippy, trying to use the sport to make himself better and growing as a result of it? Because anyway, Rick, I'll get your opinion before I give my opinion.
Yeah, okay. Here's my thoughts on it, and this isn't going to win any friends, but I don't really care. I don't know any of these guys personally. So have I, you know, as far as have I, do I know him? No, absolutely not. I've heard some negative things about him, but I don't believe that bullshit until I actually meet somebody face to face. So I'm not going to use that as part of my judgment. But as far if he did say something improper, racial or whatever the case may be, personally, I don't give a shit. Okay, that's my personal opinion. I don't care if he's a nice guy. I don't care if he's a good guy. That's for the corporate people that put this on television that you watch and that protect their sport, like the NFL. You know, they're punishing their football players if they're stepping out of line because of the public image. I personally don't give a shit about that. I want to see the best fighters fight. They don't have to be a nice guy in my book. I don't care if they're not a nice guy. I want to see a good fight. So what they do or what they say, I don't give a shit about. And neither should the fight promotions as far as I'm concerned, because then we're not seeing the best fighters in the world because it's somebody they think that the public is not going to like. Big deal. We want to see the best fighters. As far as Whitlock, you know, calling in or putting that email out, if he was personally insulted on that, if he was personally offended on that, and it really bothered him, then yes, by all means, do whatever you want to do. If that was directed toward you and you were personally insulted, then strike back. But if it was jealousy or just because he didn't like the guy, then that's bullshit. That's just crybaby stuff.
And
okay?
Even if you have a problem with it, go talk to the man face to face.
Yeah, so that's my opinion on it. So in my opinion, everybody is wrong in that thing. Did he say the wrong thing? Yes, he did. Okay? Whether he apologized for it or whatever, he said it. It's done. I don't give a shit what he said. Okay? I don't care. If he's a good fighter, we're going to see him on the big stage, put him on there. I don't care. If he gets cheered or booed, that's not my problem. The UFC, they shouldn't care about that either. But they do because they're protecting their brand. So that's bullshit too. And the third thing is the third guy ratting out somebody because he got a shot and you don't like him, bullshit too. So there you go. That's all I got to say about it.
Yeah, and you guys totally hit on all of the key points. Thank you very much. You did my homework for me. Because when I saw this going down and I was stunned. I was shocked. Number one, about the whole comment from Michael Imperato thing, because I was unaware of that. And then the bigger shock for me was the whole Lyndon Whitlock thing, because I've gotten to know Lyndon, not personally, but I've read a lot about him, seen a lot of interviews with him, heard a lot of people talk about him, and it just seemed enormously out of character for that particular guy coming from that particular team. So I was really surprised. So I did a little bit of digging into it, and what I realized was they have been having an out-and-out social media war for quite some time. And so I think maybe in Lyndon's defense, for him, this was just one more salvo in the social media war that they were having, never dreaming in a million years when some small-time fighter from Ontario throws a comment on his Twitter that friggin' Dana White is going to pay attention. You know what I mean? It's the same as if I said, hey, Dana White, you should put Rick Doyle on the next UFC when they come to Halifax, and lo and behold, you get a phone call.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm taking this, you know, it's a matter of perspective, too. If, like I said, if Lyndon was insulted by this, now, I thought he sent it directly to Dana White. You say he just put it on there and Dana
he just
White
tweeted,
picked
just,
up.
Well, no, he did tag Dana White in Twitter. But, I mean, I've done the same thing many, many, many times. Dana White has never paid any attention to any of my tweets. So why would he pay attention to any of Lyndon Whitlock's tweets? But this is one that just for whatever reason got viral, if that's the right word, and it got in front of the right people at the UFC, which made them dig a little deeper, which turned them off, which made them cut Michael's contract. So,
okay, well,
I mean, and like I said, I you know me, Rick, I'm Pollyanna. I give the guy the benefit of the doubt. I grew up blue collar and redneck, so I'm sure I've said a million things in my life that if somebody were to capture them on film and throw them into a reality television show, I'd be hung for them. So, go ahead.
I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt, too. I'm giving everybody the benefit of the doubt here. Maybe he deserved to have that done to him. I don't know, and I don't care. And what I'm saying is maybe Whitlock just did that and had no idea it was going to cause this guy grief, whether he deserved it or not. But if he did it in malice, then he has to wear the same scar that the other guy does now.
Yeah, and a few people are actually saying that. A few people are saying now that it has shaken out the way that it is, it is extremely unfortunate for Michael Imperato that he's lost this shot at the UFC. It is even more unfortunate that Lyndon Whitlock may have tarred himself with the same broad brush.
Yeah, well, there's two things that will make you a better, stronger person, and it's losses and it's scars.
Yeah. Anyway, that's such a big deal going on here in Canada these days, and both guys have fought in Atlanta, Canada recently. I felt I had to put that one out there. Two more real small pieces before we get out of here under the 60-minute mark. Tyson Cave, you announced quite a while ago, signed a big deal with a big-time boxing promotion, and forgive me, I have completely forgotten what they're called, Samson. Anyway, I've seen so many pictures of Tyson Cave on Facebook with A-listers. He's chumming around with Sugar Shane Mosley. He's with this model and that model, and he's with all these fighters, and all the fighters are completely sweaty and hanging out in the gym, and Tyson's dressed like he's going clubbing. So I need for you to do some investigative journalism for me and find out what the fuck is he doing. Like, he's got this big deal. He's obviously, God only knows where, traveling around the United States doing all this PR stuff. Is the guy actually training himself?
As far as I know, he's in Toronto on a training camp. I haven't seen Tyson in a while. I haven't talked to him. The last time I saw him, I think he embarrassed himself publicly, and hopefully that turned him around and got him a new focus, and hopefully he's going to come through. And I put a call through to him this week because I've decided I'd like to step in and do a boxing match. I want to
You're going to do what?
I put a call into him this week because I decided I want to do a boxing match, and so I wanted to get on an amateur card and give that a whirl. So I don't know if they're going to accept me as amateur or not, unfortunately. That's what I want to do, but we'll see.
Well, pro MMA fights shouldn't impact your amateur boxing status, should it? Or is it because we only have a boxing
match? Yes, it does. Once you get paid for combat sport, you're a pro.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what they're telling me. I just wanted to go in and just put on some headgear and go in and do an amateur fight, test his head, test his chin, see where I'm at. But
What you're doing. You're thinking long term here.
Well, that'd be a first.
I see what you're doing.
But they're telling me I think I got to go pro. So I guess I'm supposed to get some more details on it this week. They have an opponent,
right,
I guess. So we'll see.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know what he's doing, but I think he's coming back this week. He told me back this week, so we'll see where his head's at.
Okay, Skippy, I need to call you in here for a minute before I got one more item, but you need to tell me about your boy Anthony Berchek, because you turned me on to him. I was just listening to some MMA Madhouse radio programming a number of months back and just picked some random shows to listen to while I was at work. And listen to a bunch of stuff with Anthony Berchek, and that is one impressive, impressive kid. I did some digging around, found some of his fights. I mean, that guy is phenomenal. So I said to a coworker of mine who is massive into MMA, I said, you got to keep your eye out for Anthony Berchek. I said, that guy is going to be in the UFC one of these days, and he is going to be amazing. And he said, Anthony Berchek's already in the UFC. So what the hell is going on?
He just gave up his Maximum Fighting Championship title and signed with the UFC like 2 months ago. And interesting fact, okay? We've known this kid since he was fighting in the regional scenes. I mean, we love him to death. We've supported him for the rest of his life. This kid went to go make his debut, and DJ Tillashaw fight obviously fell apart. So they pulled his opponent and put him in there, which was Joe Soto, to fight for the title. It could have been Anthony Berchek in that title fight because he had just as much pedigree, history, and wins.
No freaking way.
Yes. So
I did not know that.
It was a toss-up between Soto and Berchek to fill in for the title fight. And they picked Soto only because his Bellator experience, he was more notable to fans than Berchek, supposedly. But,
wow.
Yeah.
Not in Canada.
No, Anthony Burchak is the real deal at 135. I know people right now who listen to the show are going to tell me I'm full of it. He is a top seven 135er in the world today as he stands.
Everything that I've seen leads me to believe that you are 100% correct. And, okay, let's talk. Oh, my God, this was supposed to be a short show and on topic, and it totally isn't. Big Brown, Cain Velasquez, he keeps getting injured, and the skeptic in me keeps saying they want for that guy to fight as infrequently as possible because they're trying as hard as they can to grow the Latin American market, and as long as they have, as Mexican as he is, right out there at the forefront of the sport as champion, then they continue to push that and do that.
Yep.
If Anthony Burchak was to, A, get a couple of wins in the UFC, and B, be willing to take his mom's name, they would probably get behind that kid and push him as hard as they're pushing Conor McGregor.
I 100% agree, and that's the reason why they are not stripping him of his title, because they're worried about the Latin fan base, especially with the show in Mexico coming up. They want him to be there with the belt sitting ringside. They don't want him to be there injured sitting ringside, no longer the champ. That's why I hate interim titles. It's nothing more than a number one contender fight. And B, you're 100% right. Obviously, you listen to the show. You know as well as I do. If he was, because he is Mexican, but if he was to take his mom's last name and switch it over for fight reasons, they would blow that kid up.
Yep, they would. They, like I said, they would give him the McGregor treatment.
And he's not only does he got the talent, not only does he have the cardio, not only does he have the heart, his wife's a pro fighter, his kids grew up in the gym, he's well-loved, he trains with some of the best guys in the business. I mean, he's an all-American-looking pretty boy. He's a good-looking man. So, I mean, he is a perfect poster boy.
And he's a smart guy. He's a smart guy who can be transcendent. He can transition the sport to mainstream, right? Like, he could sit down and talk to Jim Nance or he was just here, UFC guy. Who does their commentary when it's not Joe Rogan?
Goldie?
No,
not Goldie. Kenny Florian.
John Anik. He could sit down with those guys, and he could just talk their ear off and charm them to death, right? I mean, he's got the full package. And anyway, I've talked Anthony up so much now, we're going to have him on the show. But he is somebody that I only started following because of my love of local mixed martial arts and my following of MMA Madhouse. And now here he is. He's getting his shot in the UFC, and I think there's great things for that kid. So, yeah, I just wanted to give him a shout-out.
Well, when you guys sit here and you discuss things that go on in this sport and they're based on politics, okay, or decisions that are made on politics, company politics, remember back to the conversation we just had. You've got to leave the politics out of it. If you want to see the best fighters and the best fights, you have to leave the politics out of the sport. You have to.
I agree.
I agree and I disagree. I mean, you know me, I'm a white-collar, straight-laced guy, so I tend to lean towards the politically correct. But I definitely see the value in what you're saying, Rick, especially if you're looking purely at the sporting integrity and not as a business.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, one last shout-out before we get the hell out the door is November 22nd, Fight for Pride in Quebec, Canada. We have local boy, Mr. Michael Spenline, fighting Yanni Sherbatov. I hope I didn't butcher your name too much. At flyweight in the co-main event. So we predicted big things for Mr. Spenline, and it looks like they've started, Rick.
Yeah, so our boy's taking a leap out of this area. He's going to test the waters a little further up the pond there.
Yep, going to drop down a weight, go a little further west, and we'll see what happens. We'll be eagerly watching and reporting and hopefully have him on to talk about it.
That's a natural progression for him now. He needs to test test the waters up there and get out of this area, do a test fight out there, and just see how he measures up, test his mettle, and we sit back and enjoy the show.
Yeah, absolutely. So all the best to Michael, Kent, and those guys when they head out west.
Keep Brett and proud.
Keep Brett and proud is right. Cool. Well, we had no trouble wasting an hour again, Rick.
No, not at all. And before we leave, I watched a movie yesterday that was on, and I saw it once before. And although it wasn't what I would consider a huge blockbuster, I think it's one of the greatest movies I've ever seen Liam Neeson do. Check out the movie The Gray. It's incredible. If you've never seen it, watch that movie because
you know
it gives you a... What?
I only have one phobia, and it's wolves. So I will have to respectfully decline.
Dude, you got to watch it because I'll tell you, it's about perseverance. It really is. And it's a great movie. If you want to sit down and try to put things into perspective, it's a good one to watch.
Cool.
So
good
is Porky's.
so is Porky's. Skippy, I want to get one last comment from you before we sign out here. You don't really care much about what Zufa does. But do you think it's necessary or even advisable that George St. Pierre come back again now that he's well enough to train?
I think if he's out of his contract, he should go to the highest bidder, period. If he's going to, after everything he's done in the sport, he's proven himself as one of the all-time greats. He doesn't have anything to do now but collect a check if he's coming back. There's nothing for him to prove. And if he does come back and he's super successful and wins another title, everybody's going to say, told you he was the greatest of all time. If he comes back and loses a bunch and it's 50-50, people are going to say he should have never come back. So the only reason I think he should come back is because he wants a paycheck. Other than that, he's a world-class fighter who can go anywhere in the world and hold seminars and make money.
Yep, agreed. And to his credit, right now, he is in Cheshire, Labrador, which is look up Cheshire, Labrador, and you'll find it's basically the end of the planet as far as the North American continent goes. Doing a seminar for Aboriginal youth in crisis. So good on him for spending his time doing that rather than making a fat buck in Saudi Arabia or Florida or France or wherever the hell he could be making a paycheck.
He has nothing to prove at this point, so basically what he has to do is just release a statement saying, I dedicated my life to this for X amount of years, and at some point it became a political game to me, and I really don't want to play that game, and then retire and live comfortably doing seminars. Simple as that.
I hear you, Rick. I agree 100%. And I do believe, Skippy, that is enough BS for one night.
And remember, wear your son.
Welcome to the BS Show. Are you ready to shoot the... The BS Show would like to thank their sponsors. Jack Cameron, accredited mortgage professional. Jack can show you the way home. Graco Impact Sports, providing top quality combat sport equipment, tested and used by all levels of athletes. Dominate your world. Reposales.ca, specializing in vehicle and equipment recovery, liquidation, and sales. Hemmings House Pictures, the global movement media makers, helping tell your brand story to the world and accelerate the momentum of your movement. Farmbox Films, capturing stories the way you want to remember them.